Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, well, intelligence briefings on what I call the war for the free world. A man who has been extraordinarily important, often behind the scenes, but truly an unsung hero of major proportions in much of that war's most important parts, is our first guest. He is Dr. Mark Schneider. Today he is with the highly regarded National Institute for Public Policy, where he is a senior analyst. But he was truly the corporate memory, and I must say the conscience, of successive administrations for over 30 years, specializing in particular on matters involving nuclear forces and arms control and deterrence more generally. He was a colleague of mine when I was in the Pentagon a million years ago and has been a good friend ever since, and I'm delighted to have him back. Mark, there's so much to talk about. Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Well, thank you very much for that very kind introduction.
Well-deserved and inadequate, but delighted to have you. Listen, Mark, the breaking news today is that the Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, has been forced out by President Obama. At the moment we're speaking, we don't know yet who the replacement will be. But what, having served for so long in the Defense Department, do you make of this change, and what might have precipitated it?
I really can't answer that. I heard this morning that he is leaving, and there are some reports that he was forced out. I hope it's not over a policy dispute, particularly one relating to nuclear weapons.
Well, that was one of the questions I wanted to put to you, because it does seem as though this is coming right on the heels of what might be seen as a great apostasy on Chuck Hagel's part. He was, after all, one of the prime movers behind something called Global Zero, very much admired idea of ridding the world of nuclear weapons. This president, in fact, has enshrined it, as you know, as American policy, that we're going to strive for that. In fact, all of his behavior to date seems to suggest that he's intent on leading from in front on this one, Mark Schneider, even if nobody's following us. And I want to talk a little bit about that. But could it be that when Chuck Hagel announced the other day that he was going to be throwing billions of dollars at trying to shore up our aging, in fact, obsolescing nuclear deterrent, that this might have triggered such a step by the president?
I don't know. I hope that's not the reason, but certainly the situation in our nuclear deterrent forces has reached a crisis level, and the announced decisions of a week or two ago reflect that. They're useful, but they're inadequate. They will not deal with either the short-term threat that Putin poses in Europe today, or the long-term decline in our nuclear deterrent capability. We need substantial enhancements in modernization efforts, or we're going to essentially lose much of our existing capability by 2030. And that's almost best case.
Mark Schneider, you have, as I say, been in the belly of the beast for many, many years and have worked assiduously on these kinds of issues, these programs. You know perhaps as well as anybody what both the threat is, and I'll come back to that in a moment, but just to stay with our own national deterrent capabilities, we're told fairly regularly that the people who are charged with maintaining the reliability and safety of our deterrent, namely the nuclear lab directors, have continued to testify and otherwise affirm that there is no problem with our nuclear weapons. Can you very briefly in this public forum talk about whether they're whistling past the graveyard in terms of the actual condition of our stockpile?
Well, I think they are. What we're trying to do with the so-called stockpile stewardship is really the impossible. What I call it is political science-based stockpile stewardship, because the politics in this is the driving factor.
Yeah, so it's not the hard sciences anymore, which is what we think the labs are all about. It's political science. Very well put.
Exactly. Ambassador Robinson, who was the director of the Sandia National Laboratory, recently, last couple years, revealed that the technical advice that was provided to the Clinton administration on the CTB is not what they took. The Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty and the moratorium on nuclear testing that we continue to observe. What he says is that the technical people told the administration that they had to test at a bare minimum of a quarter of a kiloton to assure the ability to maintain even the existing nuclear stockpile, and that was rejected for political reasons.
So we've left that out of our set of options, but of course the Russians have insisted that they can do that, and since the treaty doesn't define what a nuclear test is, they've been allowed to get away with this asymmetry, and others, I suspect, are taking advantage of it. Mark, we're going to run out of time before we have the time to address all of the things we need to cover with you, and I hope that you'll come back to us soon for a much longer conversation on all of these subjects. They're so important. And again, our guest is Mark Schneider. He is the senior analyst at the National Institute for Public Policy, capping a very distinguished career in government of over 30 years. And Mark, you've mentioned the Russians and a short-term problem in Europe. We, again, can't do justice to this, but very quickly, we're seeing in Russia, we're seeing in China, we're seeing in North Korea and elsewhere, but not least, Iran, which is going to be given even greater latitude, it appears, with the kicking the can down the road of these negotiations to complete its nuclear weapons program. What is it that we're witnessing in terms of these nuclear threats that makes this idea of a world without nuclear weapons not just ridiculous, but outright dangerous?
Well, we see what is consistently almost the opposite policies that we are pursuing on nuclear weapons being implemented around the world. And then Secretary of Defense Robert Gates pointed this out in 2008, that we were the only country in the world that had nuclear weapons, that didn't have a fully functional nuclear weapons complex, and the only country in the world that had nuclear weapons that was not modernizing them and their delivery systems. And the same is true today. What's changed under the Obama administration is now we have multiple crises around the world that one way or another relate to nuclear weapons. The situation in Europe that Putin has created is probably the most dangerous of the current crisis situations, and nuclear threats are a major part of the Russian campaign to achieve its territorial objectives in Europe. You've got a crisis going on with the Chinese in South China Sea, and there too you have extensive nuclear weapons modernization and implied threats going on of nuclear weapons use. In the Middle East, it's been turned into a disaster area in the last 6 years, Iran, my view, probably has already obtained a small number of nuclear weapons and is at the point of being able to start mass producing them. And we have a situation where ongoing negotiations are very unlikely to change that.
It is staggering, and I think the American people are unfortunately completely clueless about the gravity of this circumstance. As you say, Mark, on the one hand, it is this massive buildup that is taking place around the world in all of the wrong places, and much of it accompanied by overt threats to the United States. And really, the hollowing out of our nuclear deterrent at the same time. I'm convinced that the public, were they aware of this, would be both horrified and insistent upon corrective action. But so far, they remain in the dark. We appreciate what you're doing to shed light on this at the National Institute for Public Policy. Mark Schneider, keep it up. And as I say, I hope you'll come back to us for a longer conversation in the very near future. Next up, we'll talk with Alice Linehan, one of the leaders of a national effort to hold Team Obama and the Islamists accountable for what they're doing to manipulate and subvert what we're teaching our kids. That and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts. Now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back with someone I admire enormously. She is Alice Linehan, a vice president of Women on the Wall, which is a remarkable network of moms and dads and taxpayers concerned about three issues and working to try to make sure that they are properly attended to by our elected officials and, for that matter, the public at large. They are education, immigration, and national security. Alice has impressed me over the years as one of those people who is working at the grassroots level with tremendous effect by helping people understand what's afoot and, as I say, holding people accountable. Alice, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's always great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you, Frank.
Let's talk a little bit about the education piece of Women on the Wall's portfolio. Alice, you have been all over what's going on in our educational system, specifically at the hands of the Obama administration's efforts to, well, I think, manipulate and subvert our system through this so-called Common Core curriculum. What is afoot there, and what are you doing about it?
Well, what people need to understand is that the Common Core is not about a set of national standards in English, language arts, and math. The Common Core is a philosophy of education that's not fact-based but subjective. It's the old outcome-based education model that's been we've been fighting against for many years. This is just the latest iteration of it. And so when you understand that it's about a philosophy of education and how our children are being taught, that's when you get different organizations, different people who have an agenda, they are able to get it in and get to the hearts and minds of our children.
We're visiting with Alice Linehan. She is the vice president of Women on the Wall and is a national leader, really, on the effort to educate and arouse the American people about what's happening in the guise of these so-called national standards, but that, in fact, is an open field sort of program for the Islamists and others seeking to manipulate and subvert our educational system. And you were just talking a little, Alice, about others taking advantage of Common Core. How specifically are those who are seeking to advance, the Sharia agenda, I think of it as, in this country doing just that?
Well, when you look at the strategies and tactics of implementation of what truly is a federal takeover of our education system, they're doing it through the instructional materials, which we used to call textbooks. Now they call them IMs, or instructional materials, and through the professional development of the teachers. And that's where this issue of the Common Core affects not only public schools, but private schools, charter schools, and even homeschool instructional material products that parents teach. And that's how they're the strategy of implementation.
And partly this is being done because you have to have your kids take standardized tests, and the standardized tests are now using these standards as the basis upon which your children will be evaluated. Is that right?
Exactly. And when you look at those people we were talking about who have the agenda, David Coleman, who is one of the masterminds of the Common Core, he is now the president of the College Board. The College Board owns the copyright to the SAT, our national, assessment for children to get into college, and they also own the copyright for the AP, the Advanced Placement Framework Curriculum and Assessments that are in schools across this country. So they own the copyright, and whoever controls the assessment controls the content and what's actually taught in the classroom.
Talk a little bit, if you would, about what the folks like, well, the Qatari government are doing now to take advantage of this system. There's something called the Connect All Schools Initiative, which is apparently a vehicle for greatly increasing their penetration and ability to affect what is taught about Islam and Sharia and jihad and the like.
Exactly. And what happened is the Obama administration set forth with this Connect Ed initiative to have high-speed broadband connectivity between all schools by 2017. And this is in large part funded by the Qatar Foundation. And let me give you an example of what this looks like on the ground in a classroom. At Northwest School in Seattle, Washington, sixth grade students participated in a global initiative unit that, according to Connect All Schools, allows them to see themselves in a global context and gain knowledge of how resources are spread unequally around the world.
Another example of this, Ellis, if I may just interrupt, is right here in Washington, D.C. One of the public schools had a similar global issues unit on how the U.S. stereotypes Muslims in a negative light. These are really fraught ways of describing the views of some, and I think whether it's on the left in the Obama administration or whether it's the Islamists, it can be very problematic. In your own home state of Texas, you've been confronting this, notably in fights over the schools that are being brought in by the Gulen movement or Arabic magnet schools that are immersion programs and textbooks. Talk very quickly, if you would, Alice, about what you're confronting right there in Texas.
Right. Well, Houston ISD, for example, has approved a Arabic language immersion magnet school. Now, when we think of Arabic immersion, you know, we do want people in the United States to understand Arabic, but this goes down to the pre-kindergarten and kindergarten classes. And so when you look at this infiltration, stealth jihad, as it has been called, into these magnet schools, into the Gulen charter schools, they are being very well funded. And they're bringing many teachers over from outside of the country who are taking jobs from American teachers to teach in our schools and using our tax dollars to pay for it. It's very dangerous. And when you look at these communities that are being built, in the Houston ISD is the largest school district in Texas, and that this is being done in Houston ISD, plans for Dallas ISD are underway as well. So this is a real threat to those of us everyday moms who want our children to have an education of opportunity, reading, writing, math, and American history, not an education of equity, which is what the Common Core philosophy of education is all about.
We are so grateful, Alice Linehan, for the work that you're doing with Women on the Wall to, as I say, call attention to these matters and also show how they can be resisted. Keep it up and come back to us, if you would, with continuing updates on what's happening in this particular space. We're deeply appreciated. Next up, we'll be talking with Zach Taylor, a former Border Patrol officer, about the president's executive amnesty and what it'll mean for you and our country. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where a relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family, that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260. The Answer.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
then disastrous deal with Iran is effectively done. That may not officially be acknowledged at the moment, amidst talks of gaps still to be closed and the prospect that a further extension may be needed to complete the negotiations. The reality, nonetheless, is that Iran has already gotten from President Obama what it wants. That is, first, legitimation of its nuclear program, including facilities and activities unmistakably tied to Tehran's decades-long pursuit of the bomb. And second, relief from U.S. and international sanctions that, for a time, created real costs for the mullahs as they sought to acquire the means to achieve their two most ominous ambitions, wiping Israel off the map and bringing about a world without America. All that's missing now is Team Obama's fraudulent spinning and self-congratulations. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Center for Security Policy Senior Fellow Fred Flights. With the nuclear talks with Iran possibly ending by a November 24 deadline, an important question is being ignored by the news media. Just how close is Iran to making a nuclear weapon? Well, Iran is much closer to constructing a nuclear bomb than the Obama administration will admit. Using its 9,000 uranium centrifuges, Iran could make enough nuclear fuel for one weapon in 2.2 to 3.5 months. Iran has enough reactor-grade uranium to fuel at least seven nuclear bombs, possibly more. The agreement being negotiated with Iran reportedly will not reduce the number of bombs Tehran can construct and may only lengthen this deadline by 2 weeks. The nuclear talks amount to appeasement of Iran. Congress should therefore renounce these talks and demand a new approach that fully addresses the threat from Iran's nuclear program. This is Fred Flights of the Center for Security Policy. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. I'm pleased to say joined by Zach Taylor. Zach is the chairman of the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers, veteran of some 26 years in the Border Patrol, and a man who has considerable insight into the various challenges that we're facing at and across the border, and the implications of what President Obama did last week that would intensify immeasurably, it seems to me, those challenges. Zach Taylor, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. I'm sorry that we're getting together under these circumstances, but nonetheless, delighted to have you with us.
Good morning, Frank, and very happy to hear your voice.
Well, I'm happy to hear yours as well, and your voice has been a strong and important one on these questions of immigration reform and border insecurity. Give me your overall sense of what the president has done with this executive amnesty.
Well, from where I'm sitting, it's political deception. Pretty much what the operational memos that have come out since the 23rd of November are saying is he's just codifying or putting in writing what the Department of Homeland Security and Department of State are already doing. It's putting in writing what's going to make the leadership in both parties happy, and it makes one wonder if the two groups didn't collaborate on it. The problem for America right now is how this is perceived outside of the United States. And when they call this amnesty, that's like firing the starting gun at a marathon. And everybody is going to say, amnesty, amnesty. And it's something they've been waiting for since 1986. That is the most of what the people that came here just prior to the surge and in the surge that happened in the last 2.5 years were looking for was an implicit amnesty that this administration was talking about in foreign countries, not so much here, but in foreign countries, and priming the pump, so to speak. And the pump has been primed, and now that they are carrying the story worldwide as amnesty, it's probably going to trigger an invasion as big, if not larger, than the one that happened this past summer, which, by the way, we still don't have any real numbers on how many hundreds of thousands came in that were not apprehended.
And not children, for that matter, either, as we were endlessly told. Zach Taylor, this really puts, I think, very sharply in focus the thing that troubles me most about this is that bad as this arrangement is in terms of what it will mean for the country and for our economy, our labor pools, and the like, and we'll get to that in a moment, but this idea that we ain't seen nothing yet, that we're looking at a magnet that's been powerfully turned on to draw people here in far larger numbers makes all of the other aspects of this even more damning, it seems. And on that point, one of the things that as a Border Patrol officer over the years you had to confront, obviously, was knowing who it was you were apprehending if you were able to intercept and arrest individuals illegally coming across our border. As a professional, albeit a retired one now, Zach, what is the prospect that what we're going to find is large numbers of people who simply lie about their identity and get a new one in this country that may set us up for far greater problems with these folks who turn out to be bad actors, criminals, drug traffickers, perhaps even terrorists?
Well, that's one of the things that we ran into in the 86 amnesty, and we run into it every day with false documents, counterfeit documents, assuming the identities of others is very popular. I think there's some Social Securities that have as many as 60 or 70 people using the same number, and that's the whole idea of a letter of intent to come from the Social Security Administration to DHS was to alert them that certain Social Security numbers had been compromised. And the only reason, really, that someone would use someone else's Social Security number is they either did not have one or could not get one legally. And so this is going to be a real problem to the American people.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. As the chairman of the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers, and again, folks, if you're interested in following the work of this important organization, go to nafbpo.org. Zach, what is the impact that you're experiencing and seeing in your conversations with your colleagues, your comrades who are still in the Border Patrol, in response to what the president has unleashed here?
Well, the agents in the field have been saying for a long time that what they're seeing, a large percentage of what they're seeing, is the criminal element from these foreign countries. The other side of that coin is I believe that in the last 2 years they've apprehended people from 160 different countries. So this is not something that is limited to Central and South America. It is worldwide. These people are coming from everywhere. And so they have real concerns about the people from the mid-Asian continent, the people from Northeast Asia, the people from the Middle East, and quite recently the people from West Africa that are coming without being inspected or screened.
For, among other things, health issues like Ebola. Zach, again, you've been tracking these issues for so long. You've lived the life of a person in the front lines of protecting us against the sorts of people you've just described who may well be coming here illegally for malevolent purposes. But what does this whole approach of the president's suggest to you is afoot with respect to the larger issue of a nation of laws in which the rule of law is kind of a cornerstone of our republic?
Well, it's contradictory. What has happened, logically, Customs and Border Protection's job is to prevent people from coming in illegally, and if they can't, to apprehend them. The smuggling process begins for the agent at the border once that person crosses, because he's reactive. He can't act until the person is illegally on this side of the border. So what is happening is the agent, instead of detaining and apprehending this person for removal, the government has replaced the alien smuggler. And now the agent is providing the alien to the U.S. government, who becomes the smuggler and completes the smuggling operation by getting that illegal alien to the destination inside the United States. And that is a very, very bad view of things from the agent's point of view, because now he is aiding the government to violate the law.
Well, and what we more broadly are seeing, I guess, is people who have violated the law to come here illegally, benefiting from doing so in a whole host of ways, certainly more so than people who have gone through the formal legal process. And it's got to be corrosive to an awful lot of other Americans who wonder whether they should pay attention to laws that are inconvenient to them. Perhaps they will be rewarded for their disregard of them as well. Zach Taylor, very quickly, and we've got less than a minute, what do you think Congress should do about this at the moment?
I think they should constrict the budget dramatically. And I think watching Congress, it's almost like they were briefed in advance and are on board with this latest action.
You've raised the hoary question of whether the leadership, at least, of the Congress, the new leadership in the Congress on both sides of the aisle most especially, has been sufficiently enamored of this very idea and perhaps even delighted that somebody else is going to take the rap for it, though they profess concern about the unconstitutional manner in which this is done. It does have the advantage of making it the president's fault, not theirs. We'll be talking about this, I know, with you and others more in the days ahead. Zach Taylor, we appreciate your past service in the Border Patrol for over 26 years and that you are currently rendering as the chairman of the National Association of Former Border Patrol Officers. Come back to us. In the meantime, folks, do check out NAFBPO.org. We'll talk next with Gordon Chang. We'll get his take on what's happening in Asia. That's a lot. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hello, I'm Jim Hansen, and welcome to the Free Fire Zone. President Obama has demanded that Congress act on amnesty for undocumented migrants, or he will. Where is that in the Constitution? It's certainly not in my copy. Mine says that Congress makes laws and the executive just enforces them. The president has the support of a mere 26% of the country for his amnesty plan. But he seems to think he can ignore the rest of us and our elected representatives to do what he thinks is best. The American voters have spoken. Obama just doesn't seem to care. So Congress either bows to the demands of the imperial executive and passes amnesty and open borders immigration, or the Obama will do so by decree.
So let it be written. So let it be done.
Now, this matters a lot for several reasons. One is his disgraceful disdain for the will of the American people. We expect our elected leaders to heed our opinions as expressed at the ballot box. We don't expect to be treated as too stupid to know what we need and have the self-anointed elites lie to us for our own good. It also matters because it is stunningly bad policy. A lot of liberals are squalling right now that Presidents George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan used the same kind of executive power to stop deportations of illegal aliens when we granted amnesty back in 1986. And they did. But at the time, Congress had just passed an amnesty bill. Bush and Reagan were only making sure that the families were not split up while Congress sorted out the details and amended it. They didn't ignore the clear voice of the American people and do the exact opposite. Big difference. How well did that amnesty work? Totally solved the problem, right? Well, some of us, actually most of us, learned our lesson. Obama and his 26% obviously didn't. So we need to stop them. That's one big reason we voted for Republican majorities in the House and Senate. It certainly wasn't for them to allow a reckless executive to run roughshod over the Constitution, endanger our national security, and damage our economy. So listen up, Speaker Boehner and Majority Leader McConnell. Not one dime for amnesty, or for climate mumbo-jumbo, or nuclear disarmament, or deals with Iran. If that takes a government shutdown, then shut it down. That's what we, the people, want. And you still work for us, even if the Pharaoh, I mean president, thinks he doesn't. I'm Jim Hansen, and you've been in the Free Fire Zone.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, I'm very pleased to say, joined by one of our regulars. He is Gordon Chang, for my money, one of the country's preeminent authorities on Asia. He covers that beat brilliantly for Forbes.com and for WorldAffairsJournal.com, but also for Fox News and myriad other outlets. Gordon, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Frank.
I'm particularly delighted you're with us because there have been some really important developments in just the past few days that warrant particular attention by us and your insights. And maybe we could start with something that has been obviously underway now for several months, but has just gotten a bit of attention, and that is a new Chinese man-created island on a shoal called Fiery Cross Reef in the Spratly Islands chain. What does that mean, Gordon, in terms of China's, well, claim to the South China Sea and their ability to actually enforce it?
I think Beijing wants to impose a military solution on the South China Sea, which it claims essentially as an internal Chinese lake. But the rest of the world, including the United States, considers it to be international water. Building these air bases in the middle of the South China Sea indicates that Beijing is going to declare an air defense identification zone covering the South China Sea at some point, just like it declared an East China Sea air defense identification zone. So this is going to be an attempt to dominate its periphery in a way that the United States and the rest of the international community finds very troubling. And indeed, Washington asked Beijing to stop doing so. And in the last few hours, Beijing told the United States to bug off.
Gordon, to the extent that the Chinese are putting not only an airstrip capable of handling apparently capable fighter aircraft, jet fighter aircraft, but also a harbor which will accommodate warships, is it your judgment that what we're seeing is the ability not only to enforce its claims to the airspace and sea space of those waters of the South China Sea, but also the resources that apparently lie in some quantity below them?
Yeah, China, of course, wants the resources in the South China Sea, the hydrocarbons that are believed to be there. And that's why we saw the placing of a rig in Vietnam's exclusive economic zone earlier this year. But I think resources are really secondary. What China wants to do is to control the ability to go out into the Western Pacific through what it calls the first island chain. And in order to do that, it needs to first control the South China Sea and the East China Sea. So I think that this is primarily strategically motivated, much more so than the drive for oil and gas. Yes, there's oil and gas there. It may or may not be in commercial quantities. But even if it were completely a sea of gas and oil, that's not the reason, that's not the primary reason. China just wants to dominate its periphery.
And that means the strategic sea lines of communication, as they're called as well, which are hugely important, both for its neighbors and for us, for that matter. Gordon, this was the sort of subtext, I guess, of a conference that took place over the weekend in Beijing, in which Xi Jinping's concept of Asia for Asians was much on display. Talk about that conference and how that strategy ties in with what we've just been discussing in the South China Sea.
Well, in recent months, China has been much more assertive in declaring what it calls a new security architecture for Asia, where they say that Asians need to be primarily responsible for their own security. As a general proposition, one could say that that's correct. But what they're really saying, of course, is that the United States should get out of Asia. We have very clear, definite obligations to defend Japan, South Korea, and the Philippines. And the Chinese want to break those relationships. Also, we have friendships with many countries around the region, especially these days, as countries are becoming concerned about Beijing's intentions. So really what Beijing is trying to do is to dominate the countries on its periphery. They're looking to the United States. We need to respond, make it very clear to capitals in East Asia that we are there to stay, despite what the Chinese may think.
Yeah, when they talk about Asians taking care of their security, obviously they have in mind China taking care of Asian security, and that will be at the great detriment of a lot of the nations that, as you've mentioned, we have alliance relationships with or defense commitments to. And you didn't mention Taiwan, Gordon. Was that by accident or is that because we're now leaving it out of our defense commitments?
Well, we don't have a formal military commitment to Taiwan, but we have a moral commitment. And clearly right now we are starting to see a new sense of purpose among the Taiwanese. They're going to have elections in a week. This is going to probably end up with the ruling party losing extremely heavily. The ruling party is the one that has tried to sponsor closer economic and political ties to China. And the people on the island don't want that. Now, the United States has an ambiguous relationship with Taiwan. We need, I think, to make it much clearer. I would actually like to see a formal defense treaty with Taiwan. I'd like to see Taiwan in the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I'd like to see a free trade agreement between the United States and Taiwan. Those right now are politically off the table, and we'll have to wait to a new administration to have those occur. But we really need them because Taiwan is the linchpin. We can't defend our countries in the region without Taiwan, which, by the way, happens to sit between the Philippines and Japan, which means that it is the linchpin to keeping the United States in Asia.
I hope that Taiwan is still there 2 years hence, Gordon, at the rate with which the Chinese are ramping up their threats more generally, but also to the island and their capacity to act on those threats. It's going to be a real foot race. Gordon, let me turn to one other issue. At that conference, you had the former commander of the U.S. Pacific Command, Gary Ruffhead, Admiral Gary Ruffhead, now retired from the Navy, asking, somewhat unbelievably, for the Chinese to clarify what they meant by their claims to the South China Sea. What, if anything, is there to clarify about what they mean, or more to the point, what they're doing to enforce those claims, as we just discussed?
Well, Frank, you're absolutely right. The Chinese have made it absolutely clear over the course of decades what they want to do with regard to the South China Sea. I think what Ruffhead was actually referring to is that China's nine dash lines, which appears on its official maps, are inconsistent with China's obligations under the UN Treaty on the Law of the Sea. And so what he wanted Beijing to do, which is what countries in the region want Beijing to do, is to make formal claims so that they can actually reduce the scope of what China appears to be claiming. Now, I think that this is silly because at the end of the day, we know what the Chinese want. They've made it very clear. They've telegraphed all their punches. It's no sense asking for them to clarify their aggression. The United States just needs to take no for an answer and move on from there, developing our relationships with countries in the region in a much more robust way. Because only if we do that do we have any chance of avoiding a conflict with the Chinese.
And rebuilding and reinstalling our deterrent capabilities in the region, I think, goes without saying. Gordon, very quickly, one other news item from your region was the revelation by another four-star Navy admiral, this one a serving one, Mike Rogers, currently the commander of U.S. Cyber Command, that the Chinese have actually been engaged in reconnaissance inside the control systems of U.S. electric grid companies for the purpose, apparently, of taking them over and cratering the grid. What do you make of that evident threat?
Yeah, I don't see this so much as a revelation. We know that the Chinese have been looking at our infrastructure. It's important for people in Washington to say this out loud, and that was an advance. But, you know, there are many indications that China has actually caused a couple of blackouts in the United States, including the big one in the Northeast and a smaller one in Florida. That has yet to be proved, but it clearly the Chinese have been inside our grid for no good reason.
No good reason indeed, and much harm can be done if they effect the takedown of it. Needless to say, it would be an act of incredible destruction and war. Gordon Chang, as ever, we appreciate your insights in all of these matters and your updates to us each week. Come back to us next week. I hope you have a great holiday. We'll be talking with the rest of you again, same time, same station tomorrow. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.